You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. It's David Baer here. And, you know, about a month and a half ago, late 2023, I got introduced to the writings of today's guest by a fellow copywriter of his who said, you know, this is a great email list you need to sign up for. And so I went over to the website. And by the way, you'll be getting this website at the end of the episode. Do not miss the opportunity to sign up as well. And the very, very first thing that I saw on the site was the name William Goldman. Now, William Goldman happens to be a writer who I have a little bit in common with. I worked for his brother for a little while, James Goldman, and I went to the same college that William Goldman went to. And so I've been fascinated by this guy, by his screenplay writings. He's written books as well. And I thought, well, if any copywriter has an email list where he's mentioning William Goldman on the front page, inviting me to join the list, I got to sign up. And then the very second email that I get from John, today's guest, mentions one of his favorite books, a book by Al Ries and Jack Trout called Positioning. Now, I recommend their books all the time. I usually recommend the 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing, but Positioning is an awesome book as well. We're going to dig into a little bit of both of these recommendations and a whole lot more when we dive in and have a conversation today with my guest, John Biankovich, who's joining me from Barcelona, or as they say it there, Barthelona. John, welcome.
Hi, dude. Thanks for having me here. It's great to be here.
I saw your face light up when I mentioned the William Goldman, and you mentioned him on a webinar that you recently hosted that I attended as well. And so I'm curious to hear the story behind what your fascination with him is all about.
So I think I'm a big movie fan, and I love old movies, and I guess part of what I do as well as part of my work is I dig in and I try to figure out, okay, who made this and what else did they make, and what is it that makes a certain movie or a certain TV show or a certain book good, and why did I like it? And so, you know, there were a few of these different movies that I really liked, and they were all very different. So like The Princess Bride and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And I was always researching who was the director, who are the actors, who's the screenwriter. And I kept coming up against this guy, William Goldman, who just, his movies are so fun, so well-written. The stories are so tight. And, you know, I just started researching the guy more. And I think that led me to a couple of his books. And the books were great. And some of the books were fun. And some of the books were very insightful and eye-opening. And yeah, so part of what I do is I write this daily email newsletter. And one of the secrets is you don't want to keep it too serious. You don't want to keep it too how-to. You want to introduce a little bit of fun, a little bit of your own personal tastes into there. And so it seemed very natural to put in William Goldman, especially because I've actually, like you said, on that presentation, I referred to him, and I've written, I think, a bunch of emails where I talked about movies of his or scenes of his or things that he was consciously doing and that I saw that other people could be using as well. So that's why the reference to him right on the front page.
Well, I love that. There's something about the types of emails that you write and that you teach others to write that that really are quite different from what a typical business email is thought to be structured, you know, with and thought to include. And so the fact that you're talking about, you know, popular culture elements in the email, or telling stories in your emails, or referencing, you know, a situation that happened to you recently in your emails, is to a certain percentage of the world unfamiliar in terms of email writing. But you approach the idea of communicating via email very, very strategically and intentionally. I wonder if you can sort of let's to use a Hollywood phrase, let's pull the camera back and look at the broader landscape of what you're doing, where the emails fit in, and what your ultimate goal is, so that we can sort of understand and have context for the conversation we're about to dive into.
Sure. So I think the big picture is a few different things. I think one huge thing is that if people will buy from you, they need to trust you. And I think that's a huge thing. And there are different ways to create trust. But one of the ways to create trust, which is very, very powerful and very hard to shake if you do it well, is just to show up regularly, right? And if people see that you are there and that you have a consistent viewpoint, and if also that viewpoint in some way seems to mesh with what their view of the world is, then that creates trust. And it doesn't happen instantaneously, but it happens more quickly than you might think, you know? And so I think one part of what I do with emails is just keep writing regularly so that I can keep communicating with my audience regularly. Now, the second part of it is that if you're communicating regularly, then it gets tiring for you and it gets tiring for your audience if it's very dry, if it's very boring, if it feels like it's valuable, but ultimately it's just work for both you and your audience, right? If people read it and they nod their head and they say, yep, this sounds good, but ultimately it just, you're piling on more suggestions, more tactical suggestions for them, more work that they need to accomplish. And so what I found to work, and this isn't just me, and it's worked in lots of different industries, is to have a very, you know, to make emails interesting and relevant to the audience and make them valuable in terms of sharing valuable ideas that are useful to them for their work. But at the same time, to wrap that in a kind of much more entertaining, pleasant wrapper. And that's where having, you know, pop culture references or stories comes in, and it basically allows those emails to be lighter, fluffier, more interesting reading day in and day out. I write daily, but even if you're writing weekly, I think that still holds, and maybe even holds more. And yeah, so I think that the key idea is just that you want to demonstrate who you are, that you're a trustworthy person. You want to show off a little bit of expertise by talking about whatever it is that you know, and then you want to make that interesting and fun to read, and not overly difficult to read. And yeah, I understand that the way that I write emails is specific to my own market, but I feel that in general, everybody can write emails, or everybody can write marketing material that comes from kind of sharing personal expertise. And that is at the same time more fun than I think a lot of people make their own personal marketing.
So you say it's specific to your own market. And I know that, you know, for more than a decade now, you've been writing emails or writing on behalf of clients. And I'm assuming there are sort of different styles, different approaches, different types of content, depending on who you're doing the work for. Can you kind of give us an understanding of how things are approached differently in different markets? Maybe you can use some examples from the industries or spaces that you've worked in.
Yeah, sure. Honestly, the kind of high level format is very similar. So I've written, let's say, for doctors who are promoting, you know, their own businesses. I've written for real estate investing gurus who are promoting their own trainings. I have written for different supplement brands. I've written for e-commerce companies. And any one of those emails, I think if you, let's say, are not a copywriting expert, they might look very different. But the structure to them is ultimately similar, and it's been very similar across different clients. And it's basically this thing that I just told you about. So it's some sort of a fun pop culture reference, or some sort of a personal story, or some sort of a news item that leads off the email and that people actually are interested in reading because it doesn't feel like work. And then somewhere in there, you sneak in some sort of a takeaway that's relevant to them. And then you lead into your offer, whatever that may be for the day. And the topics will necessarily change because the audiences are different. So if you're writing for an audience of 65-year-old women who are looking to maybe get fit and lose weight and balance their hormones, the kinds of stories, the kinds of pop culture references, the kinds of, let's say, informational takeaways that you give to those, to that audience will definitely be different than the kinds of stuff that I write for my own email list, where I'm writing about persuasion, where I'm writing about marketing, and which is, I mean, my audience is very kind of mixed, but it's definitely not that demographically targeted and being like, okay, 65 plus looking to lose weight. So the stories will be very different. The tone might be very different, but the overall structure is consistent. So there, it definitely, you have to adapt these, this kind of marketing to be, to sound natural to your own audience and to speak to their interests and to be consistent with what they know. But the structure works very well, and it's worked very well for a bunch of clients that I've written for.
So I notice when I'm reading your emails that, you know, sometimes you're telling a story to make a key point that is then leading the reader to an offer that you have, and you have, you know, various copywriting focused training programs that you've created and have available for sale. Recently, you've been sort of testing out a service that you want to offer as well. But often you're not selling anything. You're as we say in our world, you're selling the click, which is maybe to go read something that you've written in the past. And so I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the different goals that you might have as the, you know, the creator of the emails, in terms of what you're trying to accomplish or what you're trying to get the reader to do as a result of consuming the email.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The short answer is that, or rather than the short answer, I guess I can give you one story where I think about a year ago, I had somebody buy one of my courses. Somebody buy one of my courses through one of my emails. And I knew that guy's name because we had exchanged a few emails. So he had been on my list for a while. And then he went and he bought one of my courses. And I was thinking to myself, like, this guy's never bought anything from me before. Now he finally bought something. And I went and I checked, and he had been on my list for over 2 years. He'd been on my list for 705 days or something like that, or maybe even more, 770 days, I forget. But in any case, it was a very, very long time, right? And the point being that it took that long to basically convince this guy to buy something from me, right? Now, that is an extreme example. I think maybe that was the record in my own personal case. But I think in many other situations, it's taken a long time for people to buy something from me. And by a long time, I mean maybe a month, maybe a few months, maybe 4, 5, 6 months, maybe a year, right? And so during that time, that means two things. First of all, I have to keep writing, right? And in order to keep writing, I have to somehow make it interesting for myself, and I have to make it palatable for myself. And so one of my guiding things is just to do stuff that, if I don't enjoy it consistently, then I'm not going to keep doing it, right? I can force myself for a while, but after a while, it'll become too difficult. And so one of the things that I do is sometimes I just include links to things that I find personally interesting, because I find that it makes it easier for me to write. But at the same time, it also keeps people engaged, right? It keeps people engaged, and it keeps people guessing, because I think that I definitely don't think that there is some magic ratio between how much you can sell and how much you cannot sell, and that if you sell in too many of your emails, then that in that case, people get turned off. I know that that's not true, because I've had people, again, on my list reading for years where I'm mostly promoting my own offers. But at the same time, I think that it's good to occasionally surprise people with, like you said, selling the click, sharing something that is valuable, that's interesting, maybe linking back to something that I'd written in the past, if it's relevant, because I think this is something that we can also talk about. In many ways, I'm writing, you know, an interesting email, but I'm always sneaking in little bits of, again, little details about myself to make people trust me more, to sort of build up my own authority more, sharing stories and previous success studies and case studies and so on where I've had success. And so if I, for example, link to a previous email which is relevant, well, maybe in that email that I sent out today, I wasn't selling anything. But if I send somebody to a second email and they read that second email, then here's the person who's already consumed more of my content. Maybe they've been exposed to a little bit more of my own personal viewpoint, of my own expertise. And maybe at the end of that second email, there's a link to buy something, you know, and maybe that's when people actually end up buying. So I guess the short answer is to think long term and to basically be like, okay, how can I make this interesting and valuable for people today and tomorrow? And how can I make it, you know, interesting for myself as well? And how do I gradually, again, build trust with people and demonstrate that I'm an expert and sneak in among these interesting stories and valuable takeaways that I'm getting? How do I also sneak in some demonstrations that, you know, I am who I am and that I really am an expert at what I do and that I've gotten good results for people? And maybe if people take me up on my own offers, they'll get to benefit in the same way.
You have an entire course, I think, around the sort of how to sneak that stuff in. But as, you know, somebody, I'm watching, you know, the content of your emails and seeing a little bit of a little nugget here and a little nugget there, that I wonder if you can sort of give us a high view of what it looks like to sneak things in that advance the relationship or advance the authority or the authoritative positioning that you're talking about, and how, you know, how somebody could apply that. You're a master of it, and I know you've been a student of it for a long time, and you apply it over and over again, and it's fascinating to watch in your emails.
Yeah, so I think there's a few things. I think a lot of people have kind of an aversion to self-promotion, and I think that maybe the world splits into two groups. One group is people who either naturally do it or people who have decided to embrace it. And that, I think, is a small part of the world, and those people tend to make a lot of money. And then there's the rest of the world where people feel kind of sheepish about self-promotion and they find it kind of distasteful, and they think that it screams, I don't know, neediness or something like that. And I can definitely understand that point of view, because I think my nature is to kind of come from that angle of being like, well, I don't really like to sell myself. I don't really like to trumpet my own expertise or skill. So I guess, I think maybe one of the things that I can definitely recommend is to anybody who's looking to self-promote, is one thing that I've done, or that I did maybe a few years ago, started doing, is that I opened up a Google Doc, and at the top of it, I said Bajaković, and I put, you know, hyphen status, and that became my status and authority document. And that, in that document, I just listed out all the impressive things about my career that I could think of to date, right? And I filled it up. It was a nice sized document that I filled up right in that moment that I sat down. But an interesting thing happened, which is that over the next few days, other things kept popping into mind, or naturally things were happening in my business, in my newsletter, and things that were, I was communicating with people, getting on podcasts like this one, people buying my products, people writing to me. And every time one of those interesting, let's say, status or authority building things happened to me, I made a conscious effort to go back to that document and drop it in there, right? And that document has grown a lot, and it's had two effects. One is that, first of all, I feel like those things, by, you know, constantly putting new little wins, authority building wins into that document, it keeps them top of mind. And so when I'm writing content, I find it very natural to work in something that genuinely fits into the content, rather than me writing content and then somehow ham-handedly saying like, and by the way, I'm the world's greatest and I'm so good, and it's just feeling very off, like there's a disconnect. So I think that's one thing, that it just keeps things top of mind. But the other thing is that having that document has just made it much easier to self-promote, because when I look at that document, I say, oh, you know what? I am pretty great. You know, but not in an incredibly like braggadocious way, but it just makes me realize that, okay, like I really have done things and accomplish things that I can genuinely talk about. I'm not screaming for attention out of neediness or desperation, but I have expertise and I can share that with people. And so I feel that if anybody does have any kind of inhibitions about, you know, self-promotion, that I feel like this is a very good approach to take. And it makes it so that, like you say, like maybe you read the content, and so that the self-promotion doesn't seem blatant, it doesn't seem jarring, it doesn't necessarily turn people off. Some people will still get turned off because some people are not really there to buy, some people are just offended by anybody selling anything. But you can work in these little items of your own expertise, of your own authority, of your own successes very naturally into your content. You can help people understand that you are who you are, who you say you are, and you can genuinely help them. And at the same time, you can, you know, do well for yourself.
I think, you know, from the perspective of the reader, a lot of what you communicate comes across as matter of fact. For example, you know, saying something like, I'm making this up because I can't think of an example that I've read exactly, but a reader reached out to me to ask a question, right? Simply saying, making a statement like that increases my perception of your authority, because you have other people like me who are consuming your content who are actually recognizing you as somebody who can help or answer their question. And so making that statement influences my perception of you. Is that what we're talking about ultimately?
That's a great point. And that's a very important part of this, where, again, in order for these, you know, a huge part of your own authority in any market is what other people say about you, how big of a crowd there is in front of the podium if you're speaking, right? And online, we don't really have that. You're not in a room where you can see that somebody has the attention of 500 people and they're all wrapped on the podium and taking notes very carefully. And, you know, you say a joke and everybody laughs, right? That's the kind of authority that we're all kind of wired to respond to. And online, you're absolutely right. I need to consciously communicate that, yeah, people are reading my stuff. People think of me as an authority. They write in with questions. They write in with testimonials. And I feature that in my own newsletter. A, that builds my own status. And B, that invites other people to write me again. And it creates this kind of flywheel system where the more I do it, the more it becomes that people reply to my emails. Yeah, they think that I'm who I say that I am, and they think that I'm an expert, but they also want to engage with me. And so that's a huge part of it, because this engagement stuff is hard to do in general. It's maybe harder to get people to engage with you than to make a sale. But if you can do it by constantly communicating that other people are engaging with you, it definitely helps. And again, it creates for very natural future content, and future content that builds your own status and authority.
You used the term flywheel just now, and I heard before we hit record, you used it there as well. And I wonder, you know, this, a lot of this may sound intimidating to somebody who isn't a regular writer. And I love the idea, and listeners who tune in regularly know that systems and process is a big thing for me. And I know to a certain extent it's something that you appreciate too. You come from a technical background before you got into the writing world, and so sometimes I see you explaining things in a structured technical way, although not necessary or systematic way, I should say. So I guess the question that I'm ultimately leading to is, for an average, you know, attorney or financial advisor or an insurance professional or a medical professional who's out there who doesn't write content full time, a phrase like, or a term like flywheel sounds like there's a lot of moving pieces. And I wonder, like, what is the minimum viable approach to building an email communication system that you see for, you know, your typical professional services person out there?
I mean, honestly, I would say the minimal viable approach is get an email service like ActiveCampaign or AWeber or whatever, and start sending out a regular email. That's it. So as long as you're really sending out a regular email, doesn't have to be daily the way that I do it, I would say don't make it less than, I mean, I have a friend actually who is an attorney, and he's a competition law guy, and he sends out once a month newsletter, right? And that works for him, and it's enough. It's enough to keep him kind of top of mind of people. He knows who's opened his emails, he knows who's clicked on his emails. And I think that's already a huge thing, right? Just because there's a huge difference between somebody who pops up in your mind every so often regularly and somebody that you never hear from. That's an infinite difference. And so whether that's somebody, I would say that still there's probably a lower limit. So you don't want to write, let's say, less than once a month. Once a month is really a minimum that, regardless of how averse to writing you are, and regardless of how you imagine your audience, how much they don't want to hear from you, let's say, I guarantee that they want to hear from you much more than you think that they want to hear from you. But even if you think, oh no, these are busy professionals, they're not looking for this kind of marketing, I would still say once a month, they will absolutely hear from you. Once a week, they will probably also want to hear from you. And somewhere in there, I think everybody can find a spot that's good for them. And then again, I'm in the marketing world, so I'm writing daily. But I think the only thing really is to write regularly. This thing that I was talking about earlier, the idea of sharing something practical, some sort of a practical takeaway, and wrapping that up in something, I think that's valuable. That's a valuable system to have, but even that's not necessary. I think if you find anything that you want to share regularly, as long as that thing demonstrates that you are an expert, that you are successful at what you do, and if it communicates some sort of value to your own audience where they realize that, okay, there's some reason to read this today, and there's some reason to read the next one whenever, you know, David sends it out, then I think that's really all that you need to do. And then if you start doing that, if you start to see results, well, then you can start sending more regularly. Then you can start experimenting by featuring questions that people ask you, or by sharing testimonials, or by doing other things to build that flywheel. But really, the very basic process of regularly sending out an email, whether once a month, whether once a week, or whether once a day, that's all you need to do.
So I like the answer that you gave, because it's talking about creating habit and creating, you know, sort of routine. What I didn't hear in there was anything about why you send the emails out, what the goals are. And I wonder, you know, sort of how you approach this as you're working with clients, particularly clients who are getting started with this type of communication for the first time, rather than ones that are in sort of a routine already, and maybe you're shifting focus. How do you help them figure out what are the appropriate calls to action when we're entering into communicating through this channel, which is something we haven't done before?
So, okay, ultimately, it's going to be a matter of testing things out a little bit. That said, you know, if you're asking me why you send out the emails, the reason you really send out the emails is because they make money, right? And you'll be surprised if you start sending out emails that there is a lot of demand in your list, right? And that tomorrow, if you haven't been emailing people, and if you have a solid offer that helps people, and if you package that up inside of some sort of a deal, and you say, okay, I have, you know, I'm taking on 3 extra clients over the next 5 days, we're going to work on this thing, or I will deliver this service for this amount of money. And if you send that email out without doing anything else, some people will take you up on that offer. And that is money that appears like magic. And the first time that you do it, it feels like magic, right? So that said, it's very possible that you do it for the first time and you think that you have some sort of irresistible offer. But if you haven't tested that offer before, then you might put it in front of your email list, and you'll realize that you think your offer is irresistible. It's not. And then you just have to send out a second email and try a second offer, right? So there is an element of testing. If you have other pieces of your business already in place, so if you have a list of people who are qualified leads for whatever it is that you sell, if you have a proven service that you know those people want, then it's very easy to send out an email and get extra, whether, you know, service client work or to make extra sales directly tomorrow from your list. If some part of that isn't in place already, then it'll take some experimentation to maybe attract the right people onto the list, to maybe figure out the right offer to put in front of those people. And I would say the thing is that the one thing stays the same, which is keep sending out emails, because it's an amazing way to get a feeling for what your audience actually wants, right? Because you see, did people open it up? Did people click on it? Did people reply? Did people buy? If they didn't, maybe they hit reply and they told you why not, or what isn't working about it.
I want to ask you a question about that, because we're almost out of time here. And you've talked about testing a couple of times here, and I've witnessed in the very short period of, you know, 2+ months that I've been on your list, you actually, and granted, you are talking to an audience of people who are interested in marketing and interested in maybe copywriting as well. You actually call out, this is a test that I'm running right now. I'm looking to see what happens. And you just did this past week with something. And I'm curious, how do you, what's happening at your end? What are the types of things you're looking for as you're testing something?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So sometimes, again, you have to have a certain baseline of response that you're used to. But once you have that, once you know that, okay, if you send out a new offer, what kind of response do you get? What kind of feedback do you get from people, again, who are maybe replying to your emails? What kind of enthusiasm do you get when you say that you're going to be offering something in 2 weeks' time? Or what kind of, you know, if you are selling something for the first time and you're limiting it because it really is scarce because you're selling your own services, how quickly do people snap it up, right? And so all of the, again, you need to establish a certain baseline. If you've never sold anything through email before, then the first time you'll have to, let's say, send it blind and see what to expect and then try to iterate on that. But very quickly, you get a sense for what resonates well, what's a good response, what's a mediocre response, what's a poor response. And that way, a lot of times you can save yourself the cost of delivering something or promoting something that clearly isn't going to be there, right? Or that needs to be tweaked in some way in order to actually sell.
That's a great answer and a great conversation. And I wish we had a lot more time, but sadly we have to wrap things up now. John, for folks who want to join the list that you share all of your insights and occasionally sell and always sell really cool stuff, where should they go to find you?
Yeah, so just go to my website, which is bayakovich.com. So my last name.com. I think it'll be probably on the podcast notes where how my last name is spelled. But just go on there. I have an opt-in page, and that's the opt-in page where I reference William Goldman. So you can see that for yourself. And as soon as you do, you'll be entered into my daily emails, and then you can decide if it's for you and if it's not. And if you enjoy this style of marketing communication, if you find it valuable, and that's it. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. It is bayakovich.com. It's bejakovic.com. And it will indeed be in the show notes. John Bayakovich, thanks so much for hanging out. This has been a fun conversation.
Thank you, David. It's been great to be here. And thanks for having me on once again.
Indeed. Folks, you've been listening to More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from listening to the conversation you just heard, please share it with them. Until next time, I'm David Baer. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.